While 2020 has been marked by a pandemic, political unrest, and widespread reckonings with racism and injustice, there is a new hope that we're entering an age of women and minorities getting the justice, attention, and opportunities they deserve. Last week, Kim Eng made history as the first woman and the first woman of color to become a general manager in Major League Baseball. And with more than 30 years of experience in the game, this pivotal moment was a long time coming. But what will this historic change mean for sport? We're joined by Lori Okumura, former chairperson for USA Volleyball and current CEO of Creative Sports Strategies, Marion Rhodes, former executive for the Diamondbacks and Cardinals and current HR consultant, and Karina Bowen, chief operating officer for the Global Sport Institute and former vice president of marketing for the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'm Andrew Ramsamy, and this is the Global Sport Matters podcast. Karina, Marion, Lori, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
Let's start with the big news that we all heard on Friday, and that was that Kim Eng was announced as the new general manager for the Florida Marlins, the Major League Baseball team out of Florida. So, Lori, let's start with you. What was your first reaction when you found out the news that Kim had been announced as GM?
First of all, that was the timeline cleanse that we all needed for 2020. You know, that was a major, major moment. It gave me life, to be honest. And I think it's giving people life in a lot of different ways. And I have to be, you know, completely honest, I cried. You know, I was so happy for her, first of all. But, you know, it was a moment, right? And when you see the reaction from people, not just on social media, but, you know, people that we interact with on a day-to-day basis on the phone or virtually now, that know her, know of her, don't know her at all, right? The reaction seems to be like, wow, you know, good things really do happen to good people, right? Who really do the work. But honestly, it's hard to unpack it all because, I mean, really honestly, it's giving people life in a lot of different ways.
And Marion, you've had a long career in Major League Baseball. What was it like for you to hear the news?
I was just totally, first of all, I was shocked because I hadn't heard it. My sister called me and said, they just made a woman a general manager. And I'm like, who? And she said, and I said, oh my God, I'm so happy for her. You know, like she said, it's been a journey for her. And we as women in the sport also was a journey for us, you know. You know, those times where you saw that she interviewed or was in consideration and she didn't get it. You know, we went through the highs and lows with her also. But I think, like Lori says, I think it gives us hope. I think it only not only gives people who don't know her, but I think it gives women and young girls hope that they can now see someone in the position that they may want in the future, and that it may be attainable, that it is possible. And so, you know, I am over the moon happy for her. And, you know, she's got big shoes to fill with this position. But I think if anyone's up for it, Kim's up for the task.
And Karina?
Yeah, I was absolutely thrilled. I don't know Kim personally, but I think as a woman working or having worked in baseball, my sentiment was it's about time. Because you always followed Kim's story and saw how many times she had interviewed for a position. And you always felt like, is she just getting a courtesy interview? And you always hoped that that wasn't the case, but you knew how qualified she was for these roles. And you just felt like, is she ever going to get her shot? Mm-hmm. And to see finally that she was hired, and to know that she was hired because of her merits and because she was qualified for this role, and these barriers that had been holding her back from getting this role that she fully deserved were no longer there. It was just, it was such a breakthrough, and especially coming on the heels of Kamala Harris being elected as vice president. it was just like this double shot of finally we're seeing some tangible progress here.
So let's talk about Kim's career and her experience. She has over 30 years of experience in Major League Baseball, working with the Chicago White Sox, the New York Yankees, the Los Angeles Dodgers, and as well the commissioner's office. In her work, she's made, you know, as a part of the team, 8 postseason appearances, 6 league championship series, and then 3 World Series championships, right? So she's got the rings on her finger, on her fingers, right? To be able to prove that she has the experience to be able to do the job. Marian, you specifically worked on the HR side within Major League Baseball. Was Kim qualified, overqualified, underqualified? How qualified was she to become the next general manager for the Florida Marlins?
I think Kim was more than qualified to be the general manager of the Marlins. I think that in the past when she interviewed before, I think she was qualified then. Just think, you know, when you're interviewing for certain positions and the time that we're in, it was like, I think people looked at her gender versus her qualifications. And so I think I applaud Derek Jeter for taking a step back and saying, hey, you know, I know her. I know her work ethic. I know how smart she is. You know, I'm going to give her an opportunity. And like I said, applause to him for giving her that opportunity, because everybody had to have an opportunity to be the first, no matter if you're a woman of color or not a person of color. Somebody had to give you an opportunity, and I applaud him for giving it. She's more than qualified. She was always more than qualified to do that job.
And Lori, you've worked at you know, many organizations, reaching the top, right? Becoming the chairperson of Team Volleyball, Team USA Volleyball. What is it like to be able to finally kind of get to the top of an organization? And then now, I mean, Kim will be in the position of calling the shots. What kind of pressure do you think is on her? And what do you think she's going to have to take into consideration as she moves into this role?
Well, I think Marian really made the point is that, you know, Kim is extremely overqualified, you know, for this role. And let's just say it, you know, wish she was a male, you know, she would have been on her second, maybe third GM assignment, you know, by now. I mean, I think that's probably, you know, pretty reasonable to say. You know, also about opportunity, I also am, you know, extremely grateful and impressed that Derek Jeter, you know, gave this opportunity to Kim. But also, I think that she's going to take the opportunity and make more opportunities for others. Right. And making an opportunity for herself here is, you know, not just one person. There's going to be a massive, massive trickle down effect, you know, from this. And I think that's safe to say based on even the reaction, you know, and how diverse the reaction has become. In terms of, you know, I thought it was interesting. You know, I watched her press conference that the Marlins had the other day. And you know, she made this interesting quote, not about baseball necessarily, but people are looking for hope or for inspiration right now, you know, and her, you know, her getting this job as the general manager, which again, she's extremely overqualified for. I think it gave hope to more than just little girls who want, you know, or need the representation and want to be like her, you know, in the future. It gave hope to little boys. I know a lot of parents who say, hey, their sons came in and they knew exactly who she was. Right. And because they follow baseball, period. You know, she's an expert in her field. And because of that and all that she's seen, I think the pressure obviously intensifies because everyone keeps saying she's the first woman. She's the first Asian American. And that puts a lot of pressure, you know, on her. But I think she's going to handle that pressure because let's not forget, she has a 30 plus year history professionally and very personally, you know, in the sport of baseball, period. I mean, she's an expert. And when you have, I feel like when you have that type of longevity, you know, in one particular industry, right, you can see all different sides of it. That gives you an extremely unique perspective, right? And an expert, kind of an expert experience, you know, as far as seeing things. Like she's been the person literally in the room that nobody has paid attention to. How much do you learn, you know, when people aren't looking in your direction, trying to, you know, trying to make you the example or not, right? She's been able to withstand some pretty awful harassment and you know, and discrimination. I mean, let's not forget, let's go back to, I think it was, what, like 2003 or 2004, so she was at the GM meetings, you know, in Arizona. And, you know, it's the classic, I mean, any person of color, any woman, anybody may really can understand, like, being mocked, you know, whether it's the Chinese accent, the Kung Flu, you know, comments or things like that. You know, she really stood there and she took it. And then she turned around and she did something about it, not by pushing back so much on these people. She got angry and then she got smart, right? She went to work. She did the work behind the scenes. And that's I think, is one of the most difficult situations to face, you know, when you're either the only woman or the only minority or you know, in the room, and you're singled out like that. But it's even more difficult to overcome. And when you do overcome it like she did, wow. You know, that's a massive, massive milestone moment in your career, but also in your life. So expectations high, probably higher than I would say, probably higher than for anybody else right now leading a team in Major League Baseball. Is it because she's female? It's because she's the first Asian American? Not quite sure, but I tell you what, she's definitely up for the challenge. Right? She knows her business. She's up for it.
And Karina, what do you think it's going to mean for the game? Because the game itself has not been doing so well these past few years, right? We've been seeing a decrease in the amount of people attending baseball games. What do you think this decision and her becoming the next GM might mean for baseball?
You know, I don't know if it will have a big impact on the game. I think there'll be some people who will tune in to see how the Marlins do, in the same way that people tuned in to see how Derek Jeter would do as president of the team, because that was something unique. You know, there might be some people who are baseball traditionalists who might be looking to see if she fails because she's the first woman, in the same way there are people, you know, trolling anytime. I think there are a lot of people that will really hope she succeeds because she is a woman. But I think there are a lot of people, you know, I would almost count myself in this, that hopes she takes a very common path as any GM would take, because she is like any GM who's a very educated person about baseball. So, you know, it's a groundbreaking hire because it's different, but it's also no different than any other person approaching that job who's very knowledgeable about baseball. So in a way, it shouldn't be any different than any other qualified, knowledgeable baseball person taking the helm of a team.
And Marion, what is that role of the GM? What does the GM actually do for a baseball team?
Generally makes all the decisions on the baseball side. You know, he or she now is responsible to make sure that they are making the right moves and putting a winning team on the field. So she will have that responsibility. One thing I want to add to what Karina and Lori were saying, one thing that I would hope that comes out of her being the GM is that it changes the lens that people are looking through. Hope that it's the underrepresentation that we see, that people understand now that people are looking, and that there are things that when you go into a room that, you know what, give the person fair consideration based on their skills and abilities. So I hope that we're starting to see a difference, that women are taking on different roles within baseball, whether it's being a coach. You know, I think we'll made it when we really get a field manager, but, you know, we're going to wait on that one too. We'll just take the GM one for right now. But I think that there's been a lot more opportunities that women have gotten. So I hope it continues, that this is just the start. I always say that people don't need to be considered a token. They need to be considered a wedge, meaning they're going to open the door to let others come through. And so I'm hoping that other people who are on the hiring side look at that as it's a new day, and we need to continue to look at the underrepresentation and how we can change it.
So a lot of people are looking at the fact that there's kind of a lot of special stuff going on in Florida, right? The Dolphins head coach is Black. The Dolphins general manager is Black. Mm-hmm. The Heat coach is Filipino American. Their Hurricanes football coach is Cuban American. The Marlins GM now is Chinese American. Is there something to be said about what's going on in Florida that the rest of the world could probably take a couple of lessons and look at and say, hey, maybe we should start to look like the world that we're trying to effectively fill the seats with, right?
And I think that's true. I think it is. I think it's the demographics is changing and continuing to change. And if people think that it's not different than 5 years ago, 10 years ago, it's majorly different. And I think because people know that it's diversity is a business case. It's no longer the right thing to do. We're doing it. It's a business case to do. So if you want to fill your seats with the Latino community or the African-American community, you got to show them that, you know, you support them and you believe in the community in which they are doing business in. And so I think, yeah, I think it's, you know, what's in the, it may be in the water down here, who knows? But, you know, I think people are, I use that lens all the time. I think people are looking in a totally different lens. Even from when Karina and I got into sports, you know, when I got into sports, I was the first African-American vice president at the St. Louis Cardinals. They have been around for years. And like Lori was saying, you know, I didn't look at it. There's tons of stories I could tell you of things that happened along my journey in those 30 years that I spent in baseball. You know, I never looked at it. And I know Kim won't look at it. Anything as an obstacle. Everything was an opportunity. An opportunity to show that, you know what, you didn't need to be invited to the party. You just needed to get to the party because you belong there. She has done the work. She's made sure she has equipped herself to be in that role. And nobody really, she just needed an opportunity. And I'm just so proud that and thankful to Derek Jeter that he had the forethought to give her that opportunity. And it's just up from here.
And Lori, you talked a little bit about some of the racism that Kim has probably experienced and actually has talked about publicly. And it actually is 17 years to the day that the general manager meeting happened in here in Arizona, where she was harassed for being Asian American. Lori, when you think about your kind of experience in working in sport, what are the things that you would say to someone if they were thinking about now entering into a career of sport, into sports, and is either a woman or a person of color? What would you say to them in terms of to kind of how to combat the continual kind of institutional racism and harassment that women experience and people of color experience?
You know, that question really does hit home. It was at the Global Sport Institute, in fact, at your summit that a year ago. God, I don't, 2020 has been like 10 years, but it was at the last Global Sport Institute summit that was held, you know, where, you know, Ken Shropshire gave me an opportunity to be on a panel, right, of folks that were facing, you know, kind of addressing this question, how do you overcome obstacles, right, in your career? And I shared for the first time a story about my own situation. So my volunteerism for USA Volleyball was clearly on the board, started in 2012. And then 2014, I was lucky enough to be identified and elected as the chair. Not the first woman to hold that position, but the first Asian American, you know, to do so. Which too is kind of odd because, you know, there's a lot of Asian Americans who play volleyball. But, you know, in this case, the first words that I heard after the meeting had been adjourned came from one of my predecessors. And it was, you know, at the time you sort of shrug it off, but it was basically, we're going to have to get new furniture for the boardroom because now we have an Oriental chair. Okay. And, you know, for somebody like me, I've grown a pretty thick skin, you know, over the years. It still hit me to my core, right? I mean, I've been able to shrug off quite a bit. I mean, imagine, you know, being a woman working in almost every job in, you know, the sporting goods industry and in sport, like literally from making the equipment to selling it to using it, right? And that was the first time anybody had ever publicly, you know, to my face, said something so abhorrent. I mean, just, you know, terrible. And it strikes me, you know, that the discrimination, the harassment, you know, the jokes about, you know, and that same person commented once, well, we've already heard from you because you're the only one wearing a skirt in this, you know, in this meeting, you know, when I was sitting in on a meeting that he was running for his board. And I'm like, okay, this is, you know, inappropriate. We're not going to address it right here. We're going to do the work. And that's really what it comes down to. Like, you have to do the work. There's a part of you. And when I tell some, you know, young people every once in a while, when I'm speaking to, you know, college student athletes, I say, okay, listen, you just got to face reality that not everybody is going to be happy for you when you get this job or, you know, what, but you have to put that notion aside that it matters what they think, right? Does it really matter what the guy who called me an oriental chair thinks? Actually, no, right? What matters is I have to be extremely, you know, dedicated and doing the work, right? I mean, focus on the task at hand. And again, to folks that young people that are just starting out in this industry, you don't want to overshadow their enthusiasm by, you know, saying that we'll expect that this is going to happen. But you also at the same time have to prepare them, like, expect that this is going to happen, right? Does it diminish your ability to be an expert in the field that you want to be an expert in? No, not at all. You know, does it impugn your credibility because somebody called you a piece of furniture, you know, from the Orient? Not really. You know, it probably demeans their credibility more than it demeans yours, right? So I think that while the racism and the discrimination exists, the examples of it are plentiful. I'm sure we could each give an example of, you know, many examples, probably. That's a whole nother podcast, right? It's a whole nother GSM topic. But I do think that the way to overcome it is to focus on the task at hand, right? And to a situation like this, you know, we talk about Kim being overqualified, but she's also a relationship. She's certainly overqualified in every area, but she's also a relationship builder, you know? And the things that I think about with somebody like King Ang when I see her, and even if I don't know her or I haven't heard of her or anybody, everyone's first reaction, like, boy, she exudes a lot of confidence without arrogance. Right. She's wise, because when you listen to her speak, and she speaks quite a bit, right? And you listen to her speak, it's like, wow, she really knows her stuff, right? I mean, she knows the business of baseball, she knows business, period, right? She knows she knows how to manage, right? Whether it's a team of executives or a team on the field, right? She knows how to manage. But at the same time, there's a lot of humility there, because you know, I think she just doesn't let the noise get to her. I think she just gets to work, right? She's humble. I mean, she loves baseball, clearly, right? She knows what she's doing, clearly. So just do it, really. You know, don't worry about what the other people are saying. It's hard, you know, but you just have to keep persevering. And every time you have another experience that is shadowed, you know, cloaked in racism or cloaked in sexism or anything, you have to take it as a learning experience, an opportunity to learn what not to do to anybody else, you know what I mean? And then move forward from that. You know, it's hard to do, but it gets a lot easier the older you get. So I keep telling young people, just stay at it, you know, stay at it. And then you'll be old and crabby like me.
And Karina, I mean, you rose through the ranks at the Diamondbacks, you know, entering as a manager and then ultimately to vice president of marketing. Could you talk a little bit about what your experience was like at the Diamondbacks and what you would tell girls who want to enter into sport, what they should be looking at and doing?
Yeah, you know, and Lori hit the nail on the head that I think every woman in sports is going to have their experiences. And I think being confident that you know what you're doing is a huge part of it, and never letting that confidence be shaken. I always knew that I understood the business side of what I was doing. And I also knew that I understood baseball. You know, understanding baseball wasn't necessarily, you know, a requirement of my job, but, you know, I grew up watching baseball. I grew up playing softball. So, you know, I would put my knowledge up against anybody. But, you know, I've shared the story a lot of times about how in 2007, I was in Chicago and we were celebrating a postseason win. I think it was the National League Division Series. And everybody from the team, the executives, the coaching staff were in a banquet room in a hotel. And the brother of our, one of our coaches at the time came up to me and said, "So who's your husband?" And I said, "Well, you know, my husband is Brad. He's a realtor in Scottsdale." I said, "But, you know, I'm part of the Diamondbacks front office." And he just kind of, he chuckled and he put his head down and he looked back at me and he said, "That was a real," and I'll use the word jerk thing to say, excuse me. And I said, "Yeah, a little bit." And he said, "I'm really sorry about that." And I said, "No, that's all right." And I thought, you know, it's good for him that he acknowledged what he had said. And he was actually a former professional baseball player himself. But he acknowledged that he had made a mistaken stereotype. And I'm sure he would do better the next time. But he was not the only one. We used to face all the time inside the ballpark, security guards who would question where we were going, even though we had badges that gave us all access throughout the ballpark. The young executives, young female executives would always get stopped, asked where we were going. And it was frustrating to be profiled like that. But more and more, as young female executives, as minority executives continue to be put into those roles, it will become less and less of a problem. So it's one of those things, you know, what do you tell young people who want to work in baseball, young women who want to work in baseball? It's like, just keep chipping away. You know, the more that you keep chipping away at that stereotype of this is what a baseball executive is supposed to look like, that's how you keep making that progress. I mean, that's the only way to, you know, to keep chipping away is, you know, here's, you can put up a graphic of what baseball general managers are supposed to look like. And up until Kim Ng was hired, they all looked like males. And then Kim was hired and we've changed that. So again, to anyone wanting to work on the baseball side, the baseball operations side, you know, just keep chipping away at the scouting department, chipping away at the on-field personnel. You know, that's how you change those stereotypes of what someone who works in baseball or someone who works, you know, in the front office of any sport is supposed to look like.
And we saw this year that the San Francisco Giants hired their first full-time female coach. Elisa Natkin was a former standout softball player at Sacramento State and ultimately started as an intern and then worked her way onto the field. So, Marion, I mean, you've worked in this space within Major League Baseball. You know, a lot of discussion had been made that 2020 was going to be the year of the woman in sports, but then we had COVID-19. Could 2021 be the breakout year that we just see kind of the tide turning on women entering into what has been typically been a male dominated kind of industry?
I think it is. I think that over the last probably 2 to 3 years, you've seen that women have begun to be put into positions that they wouldn't have been put into years before that. And so as we go forward, I think people are going to now, with everything that's going on, you know, whether it's Kamala Harris, whether it's the racial injustice, I think people are more, I don't want to say interested, but more aware of the things that they may have been doing in the past, and that we can hope that they don't carry on in the future. So I think that there's going to be opportunities for, I think, women to excel where they haven't had a chance to. I think that when people start to watch and people think people are looking, take on a different persona as far as I saw it over the years in baseball when it came to hiring. if there was an issue of racism or an issue of discrimination, then the heat was turned up as to what we were going to do and how we were going to consider candidates and things of that nature. So I think right now, basically, a lot of individuals are more receptive and open to figure out what they may have been doing, and I don't want to say wrong, but been doing wrong to, you know, limit these opportunities for women in certain positions. I've had a couple conversations with a couple of friends of mine to ask them what they thought of the whole with Kim getting the general manager's position, and they were all elated for her. And I said, you know, would you have hired her as a woman? And they were like, well, you know, it's based on their skills and abilities and giving people an opportunity. And so I think people are going to be more open to opportunity and realize that, you know what, you don't have to play the game necessarily to be able to perform on the baseball operations side. And so, you know, this is the time. I think it's the year, the next year will be the year of the woman. I think it'll be the year of people of color. I think like Karina and Laura said, it's a new day. And I hope people take advantage of it, that it's a new day. And I think we will. You know, over the last few years, we've begun to see women scouts, women's coaches and things, which I thought in my lifetime you would never see. You know, coming up during my tenure, I didn't think you would ever see a woman out on the field. And so to see that, you know, people are open to that as a possibility and giving people that opportunity, I think 2021, I think, will be different.
And we saw that over the summer with the murder of George Floyd, you know, the kind of awakening or reawakening on race. Mm-hmm. Now we're seeing with this news with Kim on Friday of her announcement, a kind of, again, awakening, reawakening mm-hmm. on gender. Mm-hmm. Is the race issue and the gender issue one and the same, or are they different in your opinion, Marianne?
I think the race, I think they're different. I don't think they're one and the same. I think racial inequality to me has not necessarily meant about you being a female. It's about you being a minority. And so there's times where people will let women the door and they won't let minorities in the door. So I think because I'm a woman, because I'm a Black woman, may have been an opportunity, may not have presented themselves as Karina just being a woman. And it's funny, Karina and I have these conversations, probably the most open and honest conversations I have with anybody. It's when Karina and I talk, because we talk about these issues a lot. And I think, you know, I think it's different. I think that, you know, when you're a person of color, there are still maybe barriers that may not come when you're a woman, or, you know, the gender thing, because I don't perceive that men have as many problems as women and people of color.
And Karina, what's the other side of that conversation that you have with Marianne that you could perhaps bring us into a little bit?
The other side of just barriers that I face as a female, or...
No, just those conversations that you've been having with Marianne. What are those conversations like when both of you talk about these issues around race and gender?
Well, I think for me, a lot of times it's listening, because Marianne has a perspective and life experiences that I will never have. You know, so for me, I've been very fortunate to have Marianne as a friend for a lot of years. So, you know, just being able to get her perspective on a lot of things and being able to understand her life experiences and what she's had to go through are very different than things that I've had to go through. But we've always had very open and honest conversations. So, you know, it's a friendship that I value very, very much, because I'm able to learn a lot from Marianne, and she's able to share with me things that, you know, other friends can't share with me because they don't have the same experiences. She's a teacher for me. She's willing to teach me, and she's willing to, you know, answer questions that I have. And I think she knows. For me, good friends are those who give me honest answers, whether I want them or not. And those are friendships that I value. And I know Marion's always going to give me straight answers on anything in the workplace or outside of the workplace. So, as someone who was in charge of human resources and, you know, how to deal with workplace issues, she was always someone who was very, very valuable.
So Lori, 2020 has been this year of collisions, right? COVID-19, race, gender, politics. I mean, everything has just kind of like come to a head in 2020. So we're what, 45 days away from this year finally being over. And we're looking forward, we're looking towards 2021. And one of the things that I think I sent to you are kind of predictions and provocations for 2021. What do you hope to see in 2021? Or what do you think we will see in 2021 coming out of this year that has just been unlike anything we've ever seen?
Oh boy. that's a purely loaded question there, my friend. I think in a nutshell, you know, 2020 coming to a screeching halt in a lot of ways has allowed people some time to reflect, you know, some time to study, right? And some time to gain some knowledge on areas that they may or may not have had any experience with before. And certainly, you know, we're talking about these issues of racial injustice and sexism and gender equity and everything else. I think for sadly, it may have been the first time that some people had heard those expressions, right, or any context behind them. On the flip side, looking forward to 2021, what I'm hoping for, and I'm crossing my fingers for, and it can't all happen in, you know, 45 days, but I'm hoping that some of the introspection, some of the reflection, some of the work that's starting to get done can start to yield some actual benefit, a real action, right? So we've had all these words and we've had all these platitudes and everything else, and that's all great, but okay, we can't just let it go because, you know, now we're getting out of the pandemic and we got to get back to normal life, you know, whatever that is. I'm hoping that there's a, you know, just in general, a greater, tolerance, you know, of people in general. I'm hoping that, you know, when you put together a diversity and inclusion committee at your company or your organization, that it's not just for show, you know, that it's not just to satisfy, some list of items that came from your last, you know, discrimination lawsuit or the settlement from your sexual harassment lawsuit. Like, I hope that some of these, you know, initiatives that are being started by folks that it's kind of unusual to see them, you know, jump into the conversation. I'm hoping that some of those moves result in action, right, for 2021. On the sports side, you know, I think that I'm hoping that some people figure it out with the science, you know, because sport is, it's going to take more than 2021 to get sport back on track, right? Mm-hmm. And this is why I think it's, you know, it's interesting for Kim to come into the Marlins at this point in history, because you're not only dealing with the franchise history, you're dealing with now the pandemic situation and that type of history, right? And are you able to have, you know, games safely? I mean, don't forget, the Marlins were one of those teams that had a little bit of a setback, right, beginning of the season. And so mm-hmm. you got to look big picture, right? I'm focused a little bit more on the international sports, you know, the team sports, especially now with adaptive and Paralympic sport. And I cringe, you know, when I hear any athlete, especially an athlete who may have a stake in participating, you know, who missed out on this year, when they talk about, well, I don't need to wear a mask because it oppresses my personal freedom, or I don't need to think about that because it doesn't affect me, you know, in my hometown. We need to look at 2020 as an opportunity to do better, right? And not just do better by ourselves, but take all this downtime we've had in 2020, you know, push it into 2021 and do better for each other. You know? So, yeah, I got a lot of hopes, but I'm just hoping that some of this downtime is going to come out on the other side with some real substantive action, you know, even just the start of it. I don't expect everything to be perfect, but I'm hoping that we start.
And Marion, in your consulting, what are you beginning to hear from some of your clients, and what are you hoping to see will come out of 2021?
Well, what I'm hearing is that people are now taking the opportunity to talk and as well as listen. And I'm hoping, and what I've communicated to them is that, okay, it can't just be a point in time, that it needs to be, you need to put together programs and plans that have sustainable results and sustainable action plans. And so don't make this for the moment where you're just checking a box off. On the other side, I've also heard from people of color who are in positions at companies that are tired of being asked, you know, or trying to fix this because people are saying they don't know, they didn't know. And they're like, I'm tired of being the subject matter expert. And, you know, I said when people weren't listening, it was a problem. Now people are listening, it's a problem. So it can't be a problem. We have to go in to not alienate, but to bring people together to help them with their understanding. And so I'm hoping on the other side of this, that everything that we have began to accomplish doesn't just fall by the wayside. Because when I was, like I said, when I was in baseball, I saw a start and stop and start and stop so many times, and nothing ever was sustainable. And so I think we have a captive audience. I tell people, whether it be your employer or your employees, you have a captive audience, and people want to see change. So you got to step up to the plate and either show, you know, put your money where your mouth is right now. Are you willing to take the steps to really see change? I hope with, like I said, with Kim's situation, I hope we continue. It trickles, like she says, it trickles down. That other people look to give other people an opportunity based on their skills and abilities, and don't make barriers for them not to accomplish these things.
And Karina, you have a very interesting seat as being the COO of the Global Sport Institute. Where do you see 2021 headed from the year that we've just had?
You know, my hope is that the changes that we're making in 2020 have some permanency. That the awakening that we have in 2020, people keep their eyes open. The awakening that there are changes that we need to make in the conversations that we have, in the way that we're building our staff, in the way that, you know, we're building pipelines, the way that we're developing executives, the way that we embrace diversity and inclusion, and that we're not just, tolerating, but that we're actually, you know, accepting and we're embracing diversity. Those are the things that I hope we're not just checking boxes and, you know, I say we, I don't mean we, because I know that at the Global Sport Institute, diversity is literally who we are within our organization. It's just something that we live and breathe. But I hope that for organizations that are just kind of launching into this, they understand that in order for it to be successful, it has to be embedded in their DNA. They can't assign it to a single executive. They can't assign it to a committee. They can't find the diverse people within their organization and say, this is now part of your role to do. It has to be part of who they are and part of how they think. And they have to understand that it's fundamental to their success. And it needs to be part of who they are rather than someone else's job. Everybody needs to understand this is your job. This is part of our corporate DNA. This is who we are. And that's part of what, you know, we at the Institute are trying to do, is help people understand this case for sports equity, you know, for women, for minorities, for anyone. You know, we need to have this equity, and we need everybody in the organization to understand the why and to understand the how and understand the need for permanency so that it continues to flow throughout the organization within every individual.
Lori Okamura, Marion Rhodes, Karina Forbes Bowen, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
Special thanks once again to Lori Okamura, Marion Rhodes, and Karina Bowen. We have put in a request to Kim Ang for an interview, and hopefully she will join us sometime in the future on a Global Sport Matters podcast. This episode was produced by me, Andrew Ramsamy. The Global Sport Matters podcast is a production of the Global Sport Institute at Arizona State University. Our manager of marketing and communications is Crisal Valencia. Our manager of events and programs is Kendall Jones. Our marketing and communications assistants are Julia O'Connell and Katie Cross. To stay up to date on the latest from the Global Sport Matters team, be sure to follow us on Twitter. We're at Global Sport MTRS. And be sure to sign up for our newsletter on our website by clicking the envelope icon at globalsportmatters.com. I'm Andrew Ramsamy. Until next time, wash your hands and wear a mask.